This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 283.
I was 37 years old. I had a job. I had savings. I knew I was bankable. I knew I could refi out of it. I'd already checked that out. And I $30,000 and $10,000 of my own money into it was not going to make or break me. That one deal.
Yep.
But I waited for 15 years to do that deal. And so it was the best, no matter how badly it went, it was the best deal you could have ever done because I did it.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everyone? This is Brandon Turner, today's host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. David, the man TM Green. How you doing, David?
You can't ask me what my own nickname is. Anyone who picks their own nickname, I've already determined it's not a person you can trust.
That's why they call me Brandon Nickname Picker Turner. Anyway, what's up? What's new in your life? I knew you were working on some refinances. Did they go through yet?
I got my refinance finished. I have money again. And after listening to today's guest, I am pumped to get in there and start buying properties. I mean, I'm feeling better than I have felt in a very long time.
Yeah, today's show is probably, I would say, the most, if not one of the most actionable shows we've ever done in terms of like, try this, here's what this did, here's my process, here's my system, this, and you guys are going to love it. So before we get to that though, we've got to take care of some housekeeping. I don't know what the phrase is. Housekeeping. Okay, whatever. First of all, let's get to today's quick tip. All right, quick tip today is very, very simple. Follow David Green, Brandon Turner, and Bigger Pockets over on Instagram and Twitter. So David is at DavidGreen24. Bigger Pockets is at Bigger Pockets at all those places. And then mine is at Beardy Brandon on Instagram and Brandon at BP over on Twitter. Just follow us. We put a lot of our real estate deal stuff going on there on the Bigger Pockets channel. We're constantly sharing good things and little stories of our users. So make sure you guys follow us there and tweet us or whatever and kind of get involved in the community. Sound good? David, are you following me?
Oh, I'm following everything you do. Brandon actually posts really good stuff. In spite of the fact that his face looks so weird, his Instagram posts are really, really good. He'll post books that he's reading. He'll post other investors that you should be following. I recently reached out to one of them. I think it was Investor Girl Britt. Brittany, if you're listening to this, shout out for you. She's doing some awesome stuff. She's like flipping her own houses and she does live-in flips. And this is someone who's like, 24, 25, maybe 26 years old. And she's out there making it happen. And every time I meet a new person that like someone like Brandon has vouched for, my business gets better because I'm learning from what they're doing. My confidence grows. That's how you do it. And our guest today is going to talk about very similar things, how he started going to meetups and meeting other investors and learning from what they did. And you guys are going to be amazed when you realize what he did in the first 18 months of real estate investing.
That is true. So
you might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/BP. Connectinvest.com/BP. What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Hold on, wait, let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
We got to get to this show, but I want to ask one thing. I learned something this week. So I learned that iTunes doesn't tell everybody what they're like, how they determine what shows get ranked well and what shows don't. But I read an article that said that pretty much they're sure now that the way they base their rankings is off of people who subscribe to a show. So I'm asking for a favor, everybody listening to the show, make sure you are subscribed to this. Even if you listen to this on YouTube or on something else, go to iTunes and subscribe to our show. I want to see if that actually bumps up us in the rankings for podcasts so we can reach more people. So that's it. That's a second quick tip of the day. And with that, I want to jump into the show because it is an amazing show, like we said. So today's guest is Paul Thompson. Now, Paul is a guy that, David, you actually met at a conference one time. You were blown away by him. I had some other people that knew him were blown away by him. I met him today here on this podcast, and I am blown away by him. You guys are going to love it. He is a real estate investor who went from nothing, like real estate wise, to financial freedom in a very short amount of time. And while working a full-time job, it's fantastic. 18 deals in 8 months, plus he's done a whole lot more since then. So you guys are going to love it. So without further ado, let's get to the interview with Paul Thompson. All right, Mr. Paul Thompson, welcome to the Bigger Pockets podcast. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this should be a lot of fun. Today, we're going to be talking about your story. And I know that you used to have a job and you no longer have a job because of real estate. That sounds like the summary of your story, right?
Yes.
All right. That's all we need then. All right. That's all we need. All right. Thanks, guys, for watching the Bigger Pockets podcast or listening today. Just kidding. All right. Let's go through it. Let's talk about how you got started, your very first deal. You know, like what'd you do before that? How'd you get into it?
So first off, I was a computer engineer. I was by day, I was an engineer, and I would do investing in the evening. But at first, it was always stock investing. It was the solo or the 401k and the IRA, that sort of thing.
The dark side of investing.
Yeah. Like
the empire, right?
Right. I'm going to become a Jedi or something,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. So. The Jedis are the real estate investors. That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
So, anyway,
that's okay. Right. So it took me 15 years. I was a sideline investor when it came to real estate. I read some books, and I was an agent for a short while to kind of, I thought that would be something good to like learn how to become an agent or a real estate investor. And then 2008 happened and everything crashed. And I wasn't an investor at the time, a real estate investor, but I knew that was the opportunity of a lifetime, and I did not know how to capitalize on it. So I spent several years after that kind of figuring out how to become a better manager, how to become a better thinker. And I was finished an MBA program, and I became a manager in corporate America. And I really poured myself into corporate America. And at the end of it, I just found that I was just unfulfilled by it. And there was one about 3 years ago, there was one summer I was driving back from Gulf Shores, which is kind of where we go to the beach here in the southern part of the States. And I just felt empty because there was this, I just don't know. I couldn't figure out. I had a 10-hour drive. So me and my wife hashed it out. And I finally came to the realization that I couldn't stay another week. And the reason I couldn't stay another week was because I had the money. My kids were out of school. My wife doesn't work. But I had to go back to work. And I worked for a telecommunications company. I couldn't have asked to get off or to work remotely, even though they make the very technology that makes that possible. No, that's, that was against the against policy. So I had, at that point, I realized that I had to engineer a way out of corporate America. I was vulnerable. I could have been laid off at any moment. And what you'll find out later, about 3 years later, I was laid off. And thankfully, I had spent those 3 years working and replacing my income.
That's awesome. All right. So let's talk about, what was your very first deal? What'd that look like?
My very first deal was, I bought from a wholesaler. It was $30,000. It was in a working class area of North Little Rock, which is just across the river from the Little Rock where I live. And it was, I needed about $10,000 worth of work of repair. And it was a 3-bedroom, 1-bath, would rent for about $650. So kind of like that standard moderate low income type house that you see in the Southeast and the Midwest. And I funded it with a private money investor that I found through Bigger Pockets. And yeah, and I did the Burr method. So, and I'd done the study for it, and I'd figured out what that was, the Burr method. I rented it for $650 after doing some repairs. I did very little of the work myself, if any. I did it with a partner that I met on Bigger Pockets that was local. I met through the local RIA and Bigger Pockets, a combination of the two. And we joint ventured effectively on it. And he was a handy guy, and I knew I wasn't, and I didn't want to be. And so he did the work, and then we refied it.
That's awesome. All right, let me just jump in real quick. There's like five things you said there that newbies aren't supposed to do on your first deal. Your first deal, you're not supposed to buy from a wholesaler. Nobody does that, right? Your first deal, you're not supposed to find private money. Like your first deal, you can't do it. I mean, you can't burr a deal until you're way experienced. Like that's what everyone kind of feels like. These are a little bit more advanced strategies, so to speak. And you did it on your first one. Like, I don't know. How did you get the knowledge to do that? The guts to do that? I mean, like kind of, what was that mentality like when you were putting that together?
Sure. The reason, and actually I do oftentimes would suggest to many newbies to not do some of those steps, depending on where they are in life. I was 37 years old. I had a job. I had savings. I knew I was bankable. I knew I could refi out of it. I'd already checked that out. And I, $30,000 and $10,000 of my own money into it was not going to make or break me. That one deal.
Yep.
But I waited for 15 years to do that deal. And so it was the best, no matter how badly it went, it was the best deal you could have ever done because I did it.
Yeah, that's so true. Mm. Yeah. I mean, we talk about that a lot here, right? It's like the first deal, whether or not it's a home run, it doesn't really matter. It's not going to make you rich. It gets that train moving. It gets that momentum going.
Right. It's the momentum, right?
Yeah.
Which I could talk about a lot is you want to create escape velocity. And whether or not you actually want to quit your job or not, you want to build enough momentum so that you can kind of get out of the gravity orbit and kind of get into the stratosphere so you can actually really build momentum. And that's exactly what I did. Is just every deal I did subsequently was just this attitude of reach escape velocity.
Escape velocity. I've not heard that. David Green, are you listening to this guy? This guy's getting more analogies than you. This is impressive.
I don't know if I'm ready to crown him quite yet. We might have to have an analogy face off or something before.
We're going to have to measure those guns again. Yeah. We're talking about. I'll go.
Yeah, I keep my analogies way up here.
Reminds me of Zoolander, the dance off. Remember the dance? Dance off. Right. Dance off. All right. So let's escape velocity. I love that. Can you define that a little bit more? Like, what do you mean by escape velocity? Mm-hmm. And what does that look like?
So in rocket science, you have to expend, I don't remember the exact number, but it's like 80 or 90, 95% of your fuel to get out of the Earth's orbit. And so anytime you start or bootstrap any sort of business, whether it be real estate or not, is it requires a lot of effort on the front end. And I wanted to create enough of that momentum and enough streams of income to replace my one stream of income, which was my day job. And that's why I consider this escape velocity to get out of this kind of lifestyle by default that so many of us are told to do in our society in America is to go to school and get a job. And then consumerist lifestyle inflation kicks in and it's hard to escape.
So you've got to be the first person I've ever heard on Bigger Pockets that has said in rocket science and then followed that with something that's related to real estate investing. That's very cool. It reminds me of something Brandon talks about a lot, which is his Lyft philosophy, where he's talking about like a plane getting out the runway. Brandon, can you kind of go into that a little bit and relate it to what Paul's talking about with escape velocity and using up 90% of your fuel to get out of the atmosphere?
What are you talking about, David? Okay. No, so I started working on a book a while back and I'll pick it back up again. But basically the idea being, Yeah, it's like a lot of people give up, they fail, they never get started, right? That's the question we ask on every podcast. And let's say it's kind of like a plane. A lot of people like will build a plane and it never takes off. They try to take off and it crashes. But those people who actually achieve lift, they do take off, and then it's easier at that point because you're in the air and you don't use as much, like you said, you don't use as much fuel. You're the hard part is over. Yet I would say 90% of people, even those listening to this podcast right now, will not achieve that initial lift or lift off, if you want to use the rocket analogy. So yeah, I think that's true. And a lot of people just really struggle with getting that first deal, which is the best deal. The most important deal is the first deal, because that will lead to the second, which will lead to the third.
So even if it goes poorly, right?
Yeah.
Even if it goes poorly, you're going to learn a ton of stuff.
Did yours go poorly or did yours go well?
Not really. It went, I mean, not everything went to plan, but I had some problems that popped up, but you learn from it. I look at it as every problem you come across is some sort of a trial, and it's a trial and tribulation. You're like, okay. And when you're, I approach things very scientifically. And when you're doing some sort of scientific experiment, you try something. Oh, that didn't work. That was that was a case study. That was a trial. Now you iterate and you just keep repeating.
Yeah.
That's why Thomas Edison needed somebody who tries to make the light bulb, right? Because he just had to try 1,000 ways that it wouldn't work. And then he figured out where it would. So we haven't really done you justice, Paul. We haven't told people where you actually are in your investing career. You know, we've talked about your first deal. We're going to dig back into that in a minute. Can you just, let's jump ahead really quick. Tell me, how many deals did you do in your first 18 months?
In the first 18 months, I bought 18 single family houses. And overall, I probably did about, 25 or 30 deals, whether it be in my IRA or solo 401k or wholesales and a couple flips.
Okay, so you like a rocket. You just came in blazing, right? This is incredible. And that's what I want people to realize is that first deal, if you do it right, not if the deal goes right, but if you learn enough in it, can lead to a rocket and leaving the atmosphere, right? And that's what I want to dig in, Paul. I want you to kind of give us your blueprint for how you got started and what you built, what you learned, what tools you added to your tool belt that allowed you to get to the point where now you are full-time real estate. You are kicking ASS when it comes to this job. I mean, like when I talk to you, you're one of the most humble people, one of the most smartest people that I've met. Of all investors that I know, you're absolutely one of my favorite ones. Help people who are thinking, you know, I want to get started in real estate, but I just don't have the confidence or I don't know what I need to be doing. Lay out the blueprint of what you did so we can all follow it.
The blueprint is I like single family because I think that's what people tend to understand the best. And if you choose to go into real estate and be an investor in real estate, I want you to invest in something that you understand the best. And for most of us, single family is where that is. Most of us live in houses or have lived in houses, and we kind of understand the needs. The dynamics aren't that complicated. So you reduce a lot of complexity by doing that versus some of the other choices. Even mobile homes. I'm still not sure I understand mobile homes that much. Right now, I don't want to. I want to do single families. It's a whole different dynamic. And so the whole deal is do one deal at a time. Build wealth with little deals by buying one house at a time. And I'm always a little bit reluctant to talk about how many deals I did in a certain amount of time, because I think to somebody who is new or just getting started, that can be a little bit of intimidating sounding. And there's lots of people have been on the podcast that have done so many more than that, but even it's overwhelming, and you don't have to do that many deals. And I actually think how many deals or how many units do you have is the wrong question to ask. It's how much cash flow you're generating. You need to start with how much income do you need to replace your day job or gain the goal that you want to get to. And for me, it's pile. It's passive income has to be greater than your living expenses, pile. And that is the recipe that you want to follow. So if your number for me was $5,000, I had to have $5,000 a month in where I live in Central Arkansas, the cost of living is low. I had to have enough income from rentals that I could safely withdraw income from there to replace that $5,000. Once you hit that, that's what I call lean financial independent. I can't live an exotic life, but I'm done. Yeah. I can walk away when that happens.
Yeah, I call that like level one. There's like level one financial freedom, which is like that baseline. I can pay my bills. Lean. Yep. I hit that when I was 27. And then it was like, well, I don't want to live this way. My number originally was $3,000. If I had $3,000, I could pay all my official bills. I didn't have any car payments or anything crazy. I was like, but then like, as you get older, you're like, well, I'd like to have a little bit nicer stuff than, so now all of a sudden it went to $5,000. And then, you know, like it'll creep up over time, but
it does creep.
That level one though is what's so important. Cause once you have that, then you can get out of the rat race. All right. You can get out of the rat race and have time and mental energy to work on getting to level two or to level three or however you want to define that. Right.
Sure.
Yeah,
it's the margin in life. when you don't have to go into this idea where you're exchanging time for money anymore, and you're now you're financially independent. It's very lean, but now you have the freedom of time to, and you're actually making money while you sleep. And yeah, that's the key to wealth, is you got to get there, even if it's $5,000 or $3,000 in your case.
So were you, during this time when you were, you know, rocketed out to begin, you started the first deal, you bought 18 houses in the first 18 months, which is amazing. Were you working a full-time job during this time? And if so, how were you managing that? So how do you do that?
I was working a full-time job, and actually, of all the houses I've purchased to date, I've only done work on one of the houses, and it was a house that needed literally nothing. It was so next to nothing. I mean, less than $1,000 worth of work. One of the things was replacing the oven door. And after two orders of the wrong hinge and putting the wrong thing in twice and spending $500, which I could have just placed an entire oven for that, I was like, okay, never again. I kind of knew that going into it, but I wanted to kind of test this theory, right? I like to test theories, and let's just get into it and figure out how much time this really is. And hot and sweaty mess in the summer in Arkansas in the South, that is not the way you're going to be an investor. I needed to learn and confirm that for myself. And since then, you hire it all out. I talk to landlords all the time. They talk about saving $150 here and there to go do a call out for a plumbing issue. And I would never spend. And I ask people, how much do you think your time's actually worth? And most of us discount our time. We have no idea. I've come to the point to where I think an hour of my time is probably worth about $3,500, and it will only get higher over time.
That's incredible. Tell me, Paul, when you first started, you were working in a corporate job. Were you doing all this while you were working?
I did it on the nights and weekends, and during lunch, I would run over and look at a house or something. But then I learned very quickly that after you look at enough houses, you've seen enough houses.
Yeah.
I don't have to see a whole bunch of houses anymore. In fact, I have done a deal now using your method from your book, David, that here in Arkansas, just it's 12 miles from here. I still haven't seen it. I use all the same principles. That's because awesome. it scales, right? I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't need to see a house for it to know. Now, people I trust, part of my core four, as you call it, have gone to see it. And I have pictures and I have videos, and I've been through the neighborhood before, but I've never actually seen the house.
That's amazing. Yeah. I love
so that book was Long Distance Real Estate Investing, for those who haven't heard of it. I think that it's a methods that'll work, whether it's long distance or short distance, like Paul just said. It's really just about streamlining your business and your system so that you too can be making $3,500 an hour, much like Paul. Now, you mentioned, Paul, you bought your first deal with private money you found from somebody on Bigger Pockets. That is awesome. Tell me how that came about. How did you make that connection?
So we all kind of understand this principle that when you're first starting, you want to provide value to somebody else. You don't want to just be that annoying little, you know, person that's always asking need. I wanted to find a way to provide value. And so I went and studied everything I could. I read Bigger Pockets. I went to tons of courses. I spent some money on courses. I read tons of books. And so I would go into those forums on Bigger Pockets and I would just add whatever value. And I would say, you know, I'm not sure. This is what I've read. This is what this book says, this person's recommendation. I wouldn't say I already know this until I've done it. But then I would just add value. And then I started talking to somebody on there, and she lives in Hot Springs, which is about an hour from here. And she had recently relocated here, and she's retired, and she was well-to-do, and she wanted to get into lending. And so I went and met with her, and we just started chatting, and she was trying to figure out how to lend. But I had done all the research already on how to do notes and mortgages. So I was very comfortable with the paperwork. So we just kind of hit it off, and she funded it, and she came and looked at the house with me, and she said, what can I do? What kind of repairs are you going to do? And we kind of learned together on that process, but it was through the forum and the channel, so to speak, that Bigger Pockets offers. I don't know how I would have found her otherwise.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you know, something we talk about a lot, you know, here on the show and just on the webinars that I do and the podcasts that we do, like, you need to connect the people in your local area. And that's why, like, so much of what we do on Bigger Pockets, if you're somebody who listens to the show, not you, Paul, but like, if listeners are, you listen to the show maybe, or maybe you're watching this on YouTube or you're listening on your iPhone or whatever, that's great. Like, that's great to get information, but nothing replaces that, like, interacting with real life people who are doing it. So I just encourage you guys, like, if you get into the forums, talk to people. I mean, even if you don't think you have any experience, do exactly what Paul said here, or maybe even just go to the new member introduction forum and welcome people. Hey, glad you're here. Welcome to the forum. Like, little things like that just build relationships and add tremendous amount of value. So I really liked it a lot. And I like that you know, you built a relationship, you figured something out together, because people on Bigger Pockets want to do real estate. It's like, they want to do this stuff. You're not trying to convince some like neighbor who's afraid and never even heard of what a rental house is. Like, you're not convincing that guy. You're talking to people who already want to do real estate. And a lot of people have money and they're nervous about the market and they would be very willing to partner. So, you know, again, it's not impossible to get private money or to partner with somebody or whatever on the first deal. It's doable. And you had the confidence to do it. So just nice work there. That's cool. All right.
Thank you. And subsequently, I would say that of the deals I have now, I've only used banks, I think, on 10 properties altogether. And I'm very much a big believer in private financing and working deals out with other people and bringing in a third party catalyst. That's a human being that you can negotiate with.
Yeah. On that note, here's a question I get all the time from people. They ask, well, why would somebody just lend me money, private money, when they could just go do the deal themselves? What's your answer to that?
Not everybody wants to be a landlord. And so don't ever assume that what is important to you is important to the other party. There are a lot of aspects of a real estate transaction. There's all these bundles of rights and you can split them up in any, that's why I like real estate so much, because it's so variable and a value is subjective. Don't ever assume that what you want is what somebody else wants.
That's really good. There's a lot of good stuff you're giving us here, Paul. Tell me a little bit of the specifics on how you're finding deals. Like, in order to buy 18 deals in 18 months, you're doing a lot of deal finding and you're doing a lot of fundraising. Let's focus on how you're finding deals, what your strategies are, why you think it's working for you.
Okay. So first off, the first 10 deals, which I bought like within 2 or 3 months when I started, I bought all through wholesalers. And I was networking. I was going to the local RIA. And at the time, I was lucky the local RIA was kind of being reinvigorated by a seasoned investor at the time. And so I was started making a lot of connections. And I would do this thing called microphone marketing. And so every time I would get there, every RIA I would go to, I would go up in front of the room and I would grab the, you know, if you have a deal, and I would grab it and I would talk about a deal that I was working on or a deal that someone wanted to partner on. And then just, I was making it clear that I was in the room to do deals. I wasn't a looky-loo. I was serious. And that kind of stuff just, it's a long-term in play, but it's a very successful, you want to build this extensive network of people. And so I just didn't find it that difficult to raise private money. And so the way I found deals subsequently after that was I didn't want to always be relying on wholesalers. I want to be able to control the deal myself. And that's really the key, is you want to be able to control. If you want to do this as a onesie twosie and get a few here and there, that's fine to buy from wholesalers. But if you want to be in a business and replace your day job, you want to control the deals. That's the key. And so I've done all the traditional things, bandit signs where it's legal to do so. I've done direct mail, very different categories. I've done door knocking, door to door, almost got arrested. So there's definitely got to be, true story, you got to be aware of the local ordinances where you can actually legally door knock. And then I did driving for dollars. And then I also do this thing called farming off of Zillow and Craigslist, which isn't really all that revolutionary, but there is a deal of every 40 deals on Zillow or Craigslist, at least in my market, I suspect in other markets too, there's a deal. You just have to go hustle and do it. And so I would automate some of that. I hired some VAs after I started scaling up and I had them just sending offers. And I got to the point to where I don't go and look at a property unless I can get the person on the phone that's a motivated seller or a seller. They have to show motivation and they have to come off 15% to 85% of what they're asking for or what I think it's worth before I go look at a property.
That's okay, awesome. That's good. Tell us a little bit about what you have your VA doing.
Okay, I don't have that one anymore, but the idea that I was running was that the VA I hired through Upwork.com and I recorded everything I did on Screen-O-Matic. So, and all this is free except for actually going through Upwork and hiring them. And it was like $3.50 an hour, super cheap. And all they did was just replicate what I would do. And I had this three-letter option intent calculator, and I had this, I use Podio, and then I use Zapier, and I would just have them go through this calculator and just plug in a value. And then every house, it needs at least $5,000 of repair, no matter what, no matter how perfect the pictures look. Yeah. And then based on picture quality, or then you run some numbers that if it's a light rehab, it's $10 a square foot. If it's medium, it's 15. If it's heavy, it's 20. And then you just, you take off that percentage of repairs and you make a cash offer. And then I do two owner financing offers. I don't care if they have a mortgage or not. I don't know. I don't care. I'm just going to make an offer that has cash, which is low. It's like 50% low. And then there's owner financing of completely principal only or owner financing interest only, and with no interest. And so they basically click a button on Podio and offer gets emailed to them or mailed to them physically.
Okay, let me make sure I got this right. So you've got your VA that's calling a list of properties that you've given them that you bought from a title company or wherever you buy your list from.
Right.
They're giving this script that you've made. Hi, I'm calling to see if you want to sell your house. You're looking for motivated sellers. When they get someone that says, yeah, I might be interested in it, they go to Podio and they send a letter to this person, either in the mail or email or whatever they have. And that letter is actually a three-option letter of intent where you're saying, look, I want to buy your house. I can give you this price in one of three ways. A, here's my cash offer. And I believe you were saying it's about 50% of what you think the property would be worth, right?
Yeah, depending on cost. But yeah, typically it's about like that.
Around the 50% number, right? So that's a very low number. And Brandon talks about this all the time, that he likes to give people options when he writes low offers so that they're not as offended. Mm-hmm. Option two will be, I will buy your house for this price, which is significantly higher, but it's owner financing. A principal and interest rate or loan at an interest rate of whatever, I can pay this much. Or I can give you this much, which is much closer to the highest amount possible if it's owner financing at a 0% interest rate or something like that. Yep. So they, if they're motivated, have three different options that they can look at and decide which of these is best for them, rather than a yes, no option. Oh, you're giving me 50% of what my house is worth, forget it. And the beauty of this is that you can do this at a huge scale because you've got a virtual assistant making the phone calls and they're just sending a letter that you've already designed to all these people. When I first heard you talking about how you're doing this, I just thought it was genius. It is so simple and it is so effective because you're not wasting your $3,500 an hour time making these phone calls. You've got a VA who does it for $350, which actually is a nice round number. What is that? Like half of a 1% or something like that?
Yeah.
A tenth of 1% that you're paying for this work. And you're going to get people that say, yeah, I want to buy my house or sell my house. And then even if they don't go for the three option letter of intent, you now started a dialogue with them and you can see how motivated they are. That is a very simple plan anybody can put in place that will get you results if you're willing to put in the time.
That's right.
I love that. And I love that, you know, we talk about at Bigger Pockets all the time that everything, I mean, at least I push it because I think this way all the time, but everything's a funnel, right? Like if you want to buy more real estate deals, you've got to make more offers, which is what you built a system to basically automate that process.
Offer making.
Right, offer making. You got to analyze more deals. You built a system to automate that. And then lead generation. And so you were buying a list. Where did you get your list from? Or how did you get that?
This was from, there's two different ways. One is by scraping Zillow and Craigslist. And I have a different VA I would pay them less. And they would just follow this simple recorded video instructions on how to go in and scrape this data and have this spreadsheet. And then somebody else, a VA, would come by behind them and make these. And actually they would use text intentionally. I would use a system called CallRail where I could send a text, say, hey, I saw your pictures on Zillow. Is that property still available? They say yes. Then, so you just go through this if then else. And they say, oh, based on the pictures, I'm ready to make an offer. And you'll be surprised. 9 times out of 10, people are okay with that. And they're like, oh, don't you want to see the house first? And you're like, oh, no, I'm a local investor. I'm familiar with an area. I'll just see if we're in the same ballpark. You have an email I can send it to? And 40 offers sometimes a day, but usually I would offer about 40 offers a month. I'm sorry, 40 offers a week doing that. In my market, you run out of Zillow and Craigslist leads if you do that very much. But then what's cool is you come back around with a different personality, a different person, and you make 85% offers on some of those same properties to see if they're motivated. And so you then do a test, side-by-side test, to see if the cash offer or owner financing offers didn't stick for some reason. 2 weeks later, they get an 85% all cash offer. And if that's interesting, I would like for you to come, I'll accept that, or I'm interested. Come look, see the house. There's motivation. Trial one didn't work. Trial two did.
Interesting. So you're saying basically if you get rejected the first time, that's what you're saying, right? Then you would go back and follow up with a. So instead of like the 50% number, you were saying you're getting more like closer to
85 from a different person. They don't know it's me.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. I wait 2 weeks to see if anything changed. And then I send the 85. They might be motivated. I'm probably not going to pay 85 loan to value for that or value of it, but they're at least motivated. They came off 15%. Yep. Some of the best deals I've found using creative means and then financing subsequently have been using that method.
Fascinating. So when you say Craigslist and Zillow leads, are you talking about people who are listing their homes for sale by owner on those sites, or are they rentals that are listing for rent? Okay.
Both.
Yep.
The spreadsheet says for rent or for sale, and it actually says it that way. And you approach the questionnaire that they go through on the text is a little bit different per if it's for sale or for rent. And if the for rents are harder to confirm or harder to convert, but you'll get the potential for a landlord that wants to sell all their properties
yeah.
In a big lump sum later on.
Yep. And I talk about this a lot on these web, you know, I host a live webinar every single week on BiggerPockets, mm-hmm. which you all should come to biggerpockets.com/webinar. Anyway, one of the topics we cover every couple months is how to find deals in a competitive market. And I tell people all the time, like most landlords I know would be willing to sell at a certain price. And on Craigslist, like there's a list of landlords every day. New landlords are saying, hey, I'm a landlord. Look at me. Here's my phone number. Like mm-hmm. it doesn't get a whole lot easier in terms of lead generation than something like a little more, but nobody does it. Cause you know what? It requires either hustle and hard work or the intelligence to create a system that other people right. can work for you. And I love that you kind of use both, that you built the system yourself. And that's the key to all systems, right? You build it yourself. You know how it works. You make the videos, then you hand it off to somebody else. And then your job becomes managing the process, which is just fantastic.
And so, then we can yeah. take it to the next level if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
Because you'll run out of deals even doing that. The yep. next level is you go to property management websites, and those are nice properties that are for rent, and you do the same thing. You scrape off all the big property managers and you run the same process. And that's where you get big portfolio potentials for big portfolios. I don't like to buy big portfolios at once, but I like to find sellers who are willing to sell all their portfolio, and then I pick and choose the best deal, the best properties out of their portfolio.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I really like that a lot.
How are you getting the phone numbers of those landlords that are advertising their properties for rent or property manager?
Oh, good question. I'm mailing to wherever the billing address is from the county records.
Fascinating. You know, this reminds me, there's a video that was out on, I saw it on Facebook, but it's basically Google Assistant is getting like so advanced that now, did you guys see this video? It can like call and make you a hair appointment and like get you reservation. And it sounds like it's a real person saying with ums and ahs, and they're like, yeah, can I do like 6 o'clock? My client looking for something for 6 o'clock. And the person's like, we don't have six. And I'm like, okay, well, how long is the wait usually if they were to go at five? Anyway, amazing technology that Google's coming out with. Imagine hooking that up with lead gen for real estate investing.
Is it Google Duplex? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Google Duplex. Yeah.
My buddy Kyle Ranke told me about that, and I didn't believe him. It's unbelievable. Lied to you. Yeah. He sent me the link, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like there's O's and ums, and that time won't work for me. Yeah, how about this time?
It's amazing. Yeah. So somebody's going to figure out a way. So who's listening to this podcast is going to figure out a way to hook up Google Duplex to lead gen. You're going to figure it out, Paul, actually, because you're that guy. And like you're going to have an automated guy just calling sellers and negotiating on your behalf without a real person involved. That's the future of lead gen right there.
Never split the difference and have all this rubric into it built in.
Exactly.
Anything at 75% loan to value, I accept. Done.
Yep. That's
amazing. If you're listening to this, you need to make sure you're taking action, because Paul's going to buy every stinking house in this country if you can start quick about getting your stuff together. Paul, one thing that I know that you do that I've always respected about you and I love to pick your brain about is that, like, Brandon has this philosophy that the more tools you have in your tool belt, the more things you can tackle. There's this saying that to a man with a hammer, everything's a nail. When you have a certain mindset, every problem you come across, you try to fix it one way. You know, like if all you know how to do is fight, every time there's a disagreement, you look to punch the other person, right? You are very, very smart. And I know that you understand real estate investing because you've attended, 30 conferences since you started this a couple of years ago. Tell me about some of the ways that you will use different techniques on one deal to make a deal out of something that another investor might not have been able to do.
Yes, I don't like to be technique driven. I don't go into thinking sub two for this one. I have no preconceived ideas. I go into it trying to figure out what the seller's problem is. And I have questions that are opened in. What would you like to have happen? Why would you sell such a nice house like this anyway? And I want them to start talking. And most sellers will just chew your ear off and they'll tell you, they'll divulge way too much. Yep. You would not think that people would do that. But every new investor that I've ever worked with has always been surprised. I've had people, I had somebody actually offer me a sub two the other day. Like that's the first that the seller themselves actually knew the terms and was offering it to me. And this was not a sophisticated landlord type guy. It's like he just somehow knew. I don't know. But so I have a kind of like a hierarchy. I call it the martini method. And I start off as I always want to buy owner financing first. And if I can't do that, then I go down to sub two. If I can't do sub two, I'll do a wraparound mortgage. If I can't do that, I'll think about lease options. If I can't do that, I'll think about this. And I go down to the last thing on that list is wholesaling. If I can only get it for wholesaling, and I guess really the very last is wholesaling a lease option, which I don't really do that much anymore because it's really complicated and I don't like getting in the middle of it. But you can actually monetize scenarios where there's no cash flow or equity. So I'm looking for three things. I'm looking for motivation, cash flow, and or equity. And if I can get two of those things, motivation first, and then the other two, then I have a deal. I can do a transaction engineering service where I can find a way to monetize that so that they get what they need and I get what I want.
Oh, I love that. This is why a lot of people say, you know, I've had 100 phone calls from motivated sellers and I can't get a single deal out of it. And that's true. You might just be marketing to the wrong people, but I think chances are you just don't understand all the different ways a person could put together a deal. Like, again, people, if all they have is a hammer and they're presented with a screw, what do? They start hitting the screw and it just snaps.
It doesn't
work. But if you have a lot of tools in your toolbox, you can start taking things off. I think, I think that's super cool. So anyway, you were going to say.
You mentioned a lot of really good techniques that a lot of people are hearing and they might not understand exactly what they mean. Can you give me a hypothetical example of a deal that comes your way that you're, okay, I look at it from this angle and that didn't work. So I say, well, this might work, and kind of walk us through what that thought process looks like in your brain.
Okay. So let's just use, which is very common in the Midwest and the Southeast, is a house that's, it's kind of the example that's thrown out a lot. It's a $100,000 house. It's worth that much. It probably is, and it will rent for about $1,000. So it's just kind of a standard 1% deal that somebody from California or somebody else would buy in a heartbeat, right? They do it. I mean, happily. But to us local guys, we're not from the land of milk and honey. We're just raining capital. So we have to come up with a little more creative ways. And so we look at those kind of deals and we have to get it at $70,000 somehow for it to make sense. Not everybody wants to walk away from $75,000. So, okay. So you can get them down to say $80,000, but it still doesn't work. Well, if I could buy it for $80,000, but give them 50 down, you find out that they need $50,000 to pay off their debt and to buy an RV as a random example, because they want to go around the world. I've actually had this happen. And they wanted money for their RV. I said, okay, well, if you need money for your RV and you need to pay off your $30,000 debt, would $20,000 cover you for your RV? Yes. Okay. Well, how are you gonna pay for your gas on your RV and your insurance? Could I pay you $300 a month for the next 10 years to cover that? Yes. Well, then I just create a deal where it's kind of a combination of two deals. You could even get more complicated. You could buy that sub two, also do an owner financing and give them some cash to walk and a house that's in good shape for $80,000. If you net all that out, you're probably only buying it for 65. If you factor in the time value of money and the interest rate that you're paying may only be 3%. I can't go and get a loan for 3%. No one can get a loan for 3% unless it's from the owner. That's an example of stacking three or four different options, cash, sub two, and owner financing that I might turn around and lease option, because I want them to get out. I don't want to hold that sub two forever. So I do a lease option with a 2-year deal and I agree that I'll pay them off in 5 years.
Do you find yourself having to explain this to your sellers because they don't understand some of these terms? And so you kind of have to walk them through what this means and how you're able to give them more money?
I love that question. I never use the terms owner financing. I never use the term sub two to sellers. It'll blow their minds. And even when I'm talking to new investors, I don't try and throw those terms at people all the time. What I'm trying to get people to understand is the concepts. And I'll say, well, wouldn't you like to have some payments? Wouldn't you like some walk-in money? The walk-in money is cash. If you want to have payments, and I think I try and attach those payments to something I know they told me that they need, where you don't get all the money for the insurance and the gas in the example of the RV. You just find their scenario and you walk them through it. And lease options are especially hard because nobody understands what a lease option is. Even investors get confused with what that is. And I don't use the word option with investors too much. I use the right to buy instead.
Nice, nice. People tend to overwhelm. It's almost like people will go to a motivated seller and try to impress them with how much they know and their knowledge. But in reality, like you want to be like, you want to make them feel comfortable. If they get scared, nervous, whatever, overwhelmed, they're going to say no. I mean, everything's always no. Yep. So how would you explain, because we don't talk about subject two hardly ever here on the Bigger Pockets podcast. It's been years since we really did a show on that. Can you explain to the listeners, maybe the same way you would explain to a seller, what is subject two and how does that work? What are the pros? What are the cons? What are the benefits and risks?
Okay. And there are lots of, it can be very complicated. I think it's thrown around by gurus way too much as an easy way for people to get in without a lot of cash. So first off, if you're doing subject two, the term, you'll hear this referred to as sub two or subject to investing, but I kind of don't like that because that's vernacular for one particular use of the concept of subject to. All the terms subject to in legal speak means is exception to title. I can buy a house subject to an easement that is there. So when it comes to investors, when we talk about ways of getting financing, using somebody else's financing, it's already in place, you do subject to the existing mortgage. And the way I tell people is, I'll agree to make your payments for you. I'll own the property, but it's my responsibility to make the payments from now on. And I've had mortgage brokers that I've worked with that have agreed that they are the seller and they were mortgage brokers. And they said, sure, that's fine. I was like, you never know until you ask. I was nervous. I mean, I knew he's a mortgage broker and he said, sure, let's do that.
That's funny.
So what about, so tell us about the what does a due on sale clause and how does that affect, like, how does that play into this?
And he did not ask me about the due on sale clause. I had to say that. Now you are aware you're a mortgage broker. Let me explain. So most modern, or practically every modern traditional bank note these days, or mortgage these days, has a due on sales or an acceleration clause. And it gives them, the bank, the note holder, the right to accelerate the clause if title exchanges or title transfers. It doesn't mean they have the right, or it doesn't mean they will, or it's illegal. They have the right to accelerate. So it is a potential risk. And so I don't like to take on subject twos unless I know there's a lot of equity in the deal or a ton of cash flow that makes it worth the risk, because I am so careful with subject to investing that somebody is putting a lot of faith in me, and it is not a technique that to be used lightly just because you can. And sometimes somebody will offer subject to the existing mortgage and you're like, oh, they did it. They're going to do a sub two, but you don't want that deal because there's no cash flow in it and it has no equity. Just don't do it just because they agreed to it.
So what I want to make sure we highlight for everybody is that when someone's giving a loan to someone else, a bank to a borrower, or like me, if I'm the lender, I would say, hey, I'm willing to let you borrow this money from me, Paul, because I know your credit score. I know your debt to income. I trust you're going to pay me back. But if you're going to go give title to someone else, well, now he's got to make the payments and I don't know that guy, right? So I have the right, if I don't like that you're transferring title to someone else, to say, no, now you have to pay off the loan in full because I don't want to get payments from this person because I can't trust that they're going to pay it back. That's called the due on sale clause, that all the money that I've let you borrow is due on the transfer of the title from you to someone else. And it's very important that you recognize most banks don't care. If that check's coming in, they don't care where it's coming from, right? But there are, scenarios where that might change, right? Like we might see a spike in interest rates. Right now you're getting loans at 3%, 4%, or 5%. Well, if interest rates go up and you're getting loans at 15%, the bank might say, I want my money back because I want to go lend it to someone at 15%, not the 4% or 5%. And if they have the opportunity to take it back with a due on sale clause, they will. So you're very wise to be careful using that. It doesn't mean you should avoid it. It doesn't mean that like subject to is bad and you should look at it. It means you need to understand what you're getting into. That's one of the things that I really respect about the way that you're investing, is that you're not just saying, oh, well, this is what I do. I'm a subject to investor. I go buy stuff subject to, and you just blindly follow this path because it's always worked before. You're looking at every single different angle from this and finding the piece that works the best. And one thing that you mentioned that I don't want to get overlooked is that you're actually speaking to the sellers at length when you first talk to them and getting their story so that you know which of these tools is going to work better, right? Is that you're like a contractor that's going and looking over the whole house and seeing exactly what tools you're going to need to bring to this thing, to the job site, rather than showing up with my hammer and my saw because that's all I have and I'm just going to hammer and saw whatever I can. By asking questions and listening to people's situations and then understanding real estate investing at a deep level, you can come up with a solution that will work best for them. And as a byproduct of that, it will work for you and you'll be building your wealth. That's how the best investors make things happen. Brandon and I always say, when you're finding an investment property, you're looking for some form of distress. What you're describing right now, Paul, is a personal distress, most likely. Mm-hmm. They need to sell this house and they don't want it. That means you're solving a problem. You're not just finding a great deal. Like, there's nobody out there who's just like Johnny Appleseed throwing out great deals because they're this nice, benevolent person that wants to give things away. You're inheriting someone else's problem that they can't solve. So the more tools you have, the more likely you're going to be to solve it. That's why you've been so successful. Brandon, what are your thoughts on this?
I love when you ask that. You're like, you're thinking, man, I've been talking for a while. I better get Brandon a chance.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I don't want to eclipse your greatness.
No, I guess my thought was this. Like, I don't do subject to because it makes me nervous. There's nothing wrong with it, but I just haven't done it. In fact, I actually wrote a whole chapter. When I wrote the book on investing in real estate with no one loaning out, I wrote a whole chapter on it. Then I took it out of the book. And when we published it, I didn't include it in there because I was like, well, I don't actually do this. I did every other strategy in the book. I didn't do that one. And there are a lot of things to be nervous about. So here, I guess my bottom line is this, like, don't be afraid of it, but if you're going to do it, learn how to do it. Like, it's complicated, maybe a little bit. So even if you're listening to this show right now, yeah, don't get
it. It is complicated.
It is.
And there's a lot of stuff in the back end with the insurance and figuring out how, if you're going to try and obfuscate the fact that the title was transferred using land trust, and it can get complicated pretty quickly. And it's way too deep to want to go into here. But if you decide that you want to use that sort of technique, then it is something that you want to go find a book on subject to, or you want to go to a conference that is talking about the nuances of it. Or there's a lot of content, and it's very mixed on BiggerPockets.com. Pockets forums about the pros and cons of it. I actually use it oftentimes when there's not even institutional debt involved. I'll do sub two amongst friends. And a lot of people don't realize that. I like to invest in little posses. And we invest with each other in like this kind of gaggle in a group of people that are doing investments. Well, we're loaning money to each other. And I'm happy to have somebody do a subject two of my mortgage that I've lent to somebody else on, so long as I know that the collateral is good and that I know who the new payer is. Yeah. That's all the lender is typically wanting to know is the person that's going to pay, are they reliable? And so it's actually, if you talk to lawyers, that blows their mind that sub two exists, unless they realize that it's actually, it's often done amongst interested parties that know each other already. That's not that uncommon, but when it's on like a random seller that you don't really have a relationship with, that's where it's uncommon amongst the legal people you talk to.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's just really, really good advice. Again, with anything, just get the right knowledge, get the right information, get all that good stuff.
We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes to help you see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like, so you can find a home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to help you get the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. Listen up, business owners, because I've got some quick little math for you. Fewer costs equal more profit. The problem? You're spending more than ever on operations, materials, deliveries, software, and more. So why not reduce your costs and headaches with NetSuite by Oracle? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Oh, also, NetSuite lives in the cloud, which means you can reduce IT costs with no hardware required. Cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because now you've got one unified business management suite. You can improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. It makes sense that over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. So don't let rising costs sink your business growth. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/biggerpockets. netsuite.com/biggerpockets. netsuite.com/biggerpockets.
And speaking of like knowledge and gaining that stuff, I was reading the notes on kind of what we had talked to you about ahead of time, you know, kind of a pre-interview. Mm-hmm. And in there it says, "I lie every day." I want to know what you mean by that. I lie L.I.E. every day. What does that mean?
Okay. It's an acronym. And it's, for me, this is kind of my own personal philosophy, and it's just kind of a funny way to remember it when I talk to people, is I learn every day. And so what I do is I always want to make myself better. And so the way I became an investor and did the amount of deals I did in the relatively short amount of time, considering my experience level, was that I poured myself into investing my inner game, or improving my inner game, such that I could transform myself to become something else so that I could get where I want to be. And I want to always learn. I spend probably 2 to 4 hours a day investing on or learning, somehow improving myself. And so the next is invest, learn, invest. And so I invest can be apply or invest. I always believe, even if you have a day job, you don't want to quit it, you should always be investing monetarily, or investing what you've learned and applying what you've learned for the future to do these little test cases, these trials. How am I going to get a little bit better every day? And that's what I call investing. And then last, and probably the most important one, is enrich somebody else constantly. I always want to find somehow to basically take what I've learned, take what I've invested in, take what I've applied, and how can I share that with somebody else? How can I enrich and make somebody else better? Because I believe in the giver's gain principle of the more I help somebody else, the more I empower other people and make them better, it'll come back to me somehow. I don't even know when or how, but it always comes back somehow.
That's cool. That's true. I was, I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, but I'll say it again now. I was doing research for a potential book that I'm working on. And in there, I found the stat, and it was something, I'm going to get it wrong because it's not perfect, but basically it was like, for every dollar a person gives, like, they earn back like $1.83 or something like that. And it was like this, like, right, like principle. They did this study about people who gave versus didn't give. And it found out that people who are more generous with their money or whatever, I mean, specifically talking about money, but in general, generosity, you receive back even more than that. And I'm like, I'm not guaranteeing. It's kind of like the, I don't know, TV preachers who are like, just send in your seed of faith and you'll be rich. Yeah. It's not like that, but like, there's this thing when people give, when we release our grasp that money is this finite thing that we have to hold on to and it's scarce. When we release that into the world and say, hey, I'm going to be generous with my money and with my time, there's just something happens. Have you found that in your own life as well?
Absolutely. I think you guys are both a member of, or part of GoBundance, and I'm not, but that's, I live up to the same kind of concept, or this life and air concept, that there is plenty of money for all the things you truly want there. If you want them badly enough. And I believe in an abundance mindset that, you know, I was raised, and probably most everybody listening, and maybe you guys, were raised in a scarcity mindset. And there's more money out there, and there's plenty of time for anything you want to do if you want to do it badly enough. And so I absolutely believe that.
Yeah, that's so true. So, all right. So speaking of money, I want to talk a little bit more about your kind of concepts with money. Again, I had some notes here that I want to make sure we cover. One of the things that you had written when you had sent us some emails, it said, we all think we want money, but that's not really true. What do you mean by that?
That's right. So I'm gonna give you a scenario for both of you. Would you rather have a $100,000 house that pays you $1,000 a month in rent, or would you rather have a note that you've invested in that pays you 6% return? It's $100,000. Or would you rather have a promissory note that's worth $100,000 that did not increase in value, had no return, and actually decreased in value? Which of those three would you rather have?
I think I'd want the, if I understand the question right, I think I'd want the rental house that gives me the $100,000.
So it was a promissory note or a rental house, or what was the other option?
And the third option was another promissory note that had no return and it was depreciating in value every day.
I'd probably go with the rental house.
Okay. The third option is $100,000 cash.
Oh.
So right, do you want cash? Really? You want cash can do for you, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. So you're going to take that cash and you're going to take the cash and go invest it into a $100,000 house, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. Because that's what you do. Or if you prefer to do notes, then you would go and invest in a note that gives you 6% return, but you don't have all the headaches, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't actually want cash. You just want what cash can give you. It's flexible and you can spend it on whatever you want. That's why it's nice, but it's a terrible investment. You would not want to hang on to cash. You don't want money. You want what money can do for you. And I definitely want more money, and I love money, and I'm proud to say that I love money, but I love what money can do for me.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think keeping that in mind as people get into real estate is so important, because a lot of times we think of a number like, I want to be a millionaire, or I want to have $10 million in the bank. But I like to kind of challenge people with, like, well, what do you really want? What is the purpose of that? Well, I want to be able to quit my job and travel the world. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's different. Keep that in mind. You want to build a life that enables you to do that, right? How many investors do we know that are like, get into real estate because they want this mythical financial freedom, and then they work 100 hours a week even when they're financially free, right? So their whole goal was to get out of work and not have to work so much, spend more time traveling and hanging with family and working hobbies. and then they don't actually do that. It's like this never, they just traded one rat race for another one.
You have to be very careful or you go buy yourself another job.
Yep. Yeah. It's very true. So how do you balance that in terms of, you know, you want investments that pay you passive income, but you also need like, you know, potentially flipping houses or wholesaling. Do you do any of that stuff? Like, how do you balance that in your life?
I do all three. So the way my business is set up is that I have my end game is to have seven streams of income, and each one of them can stand on their own because wealthy people have seven streams of income. It could be five, it could be eight, it doesn't matter. The idea is that I don't depend on just one. So rentals is kind of the foundation that I have now. So I have about 25, and I'll probably add about six or so this year, give or take. And there's no magic number to it if I can find the right deal. And once I hit about 40, then I don't want any more. And that's one pillar, so to speak. And I also do note investing. And so I do that out of my IRA and my solo 401k. I lend money or I buy other notes that are non-performing or performing or depending on your preference. And then I also have a stock portfolio from my previous days when I was investing, and I just kind of keep that. And that's why it's third pillar. So I'm working on pillar number four, and pillar number four is kind of doing more wholesaling and more flips because I'm doing this marketing. I've gotten good at marketing. So that is a way to make money. And I do layups when it comes to this stuff. I don't do any of the work. I already have the contractors line up. I use my network effectively to get all this stuff done. I will do a flip for which I have no money in it and I have nothing. All I did was I brought the deal or I brought the buyer from my buyer's list. And I stay in, and I like to do effectively what they call wholetailing, where you take a property to title and you take title to the property and then you just slow down trying to sell the property and you want to get as much out of it in its current condition or with very light rehab. I'm not getting it retail ready. I don't really like selling to retail buyers because of all the complexities and the lawsuit potentials. I like to wholetail to other investors instead. But instead of having to get a $5,000 or $10,000 assignment, I can get sometimes $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 deal off of doing a hotel. It's the same house with little to no work. The additional effort is getting utilities on and taking title.
I don't even know what to say. I'm kind of speechless. This is like, you've got this down to a science where you're getting all the benefits of real estate investing without most of the headaches. You're just doing the layups, right? But you didn't start off that way. You had to start off getting your teeth kicked in like everybody else, seeing what worked, seeing what didn't work, doing more of what worked, doing less of what didn't work, building up your confidence to get other people involved. You mentioned something earlier, the third party catalyst that you look for to kind of make a deal happen. And what you're just describing, I can see, like, I brought the flip. I didn't do anything else. None of the money, none of the work. Can you tell me about some of the ways you recognize a third party catalyst that you think would help you and what you look for them to accomplish in your deals?
Sure. It always starts with a deal. And so you have a deal that someone brings to you and they ask about it. Hey, I have a deal and it's a good flip. And they tell you all these details about it. And I don't care. It's a house, whatever. It's everything's fixable. I want to know what's the random repairs. And they're trying, well, it's 17, but no. Is it 15 or 20? Just tell me. Okay. It's 20. And I round up $20,000. Okay. So you need 50 acquisition. You need 20 to purchase it. And you think the ARV is 100. I'll work with that. What do you need to make that happen? You need $70,000. Well, do you know anybody who has $70,000? Go find somebody that's a third party that comes in and brings. Maybe I have it. Maybe I don't. Sometimes what I do is I'll say, okay, well, how about this? I'll do that deal with you. I'll bring $70,000 to the table and do your flip. And then I turn around and I go find somebody that I know has money that's sitting around looking for an investment. And then I will buy it and wrap the mortgage around it, or I'll lend on it and wrap the mortgage and I'll have two into it and somebody else will bring 68. So my 2000 is all I have right now in my solo 401k. Everything else is tapped out, but I have that interest that's come in. I want to put it back to work. I want the interest to compound on itself. So then I just have that $2,000 wrapped around and I'm in the middle of the deal. So I'm not brokering money. I'm still a principal involved and I am kind of the senior guy involved. Somebody is a new flipper. I've seen the house. I'm comfortable with it. And that person who lends money to me at 68 at say 8%, but I'm getting 15 on my two is fine with that. And they know that's happening.
What makes that possible is that people come to you as the expert. They trust you because you're an honest person and they trust you because you know what you're doing and you've made it happen. And you've got this like aura about you that, hey, Paul is a calming influence that can make this happen. And that's why you're able to be involved in a deal with $2,000 that somebody else wouldn't be able to be. And that was a result of you studying real estate and getting involved and taking action for long enough and developing into this person. Because I can already hear a lot of the objections coming. Nobody would ever let me be in on a deal for $2,000. Well, that's because you're not Paul. But what's stopping you from becoming him? What's stopping you from learning enough about real estate that you're the guy that has all the answers, that someone says, hey, I found a good deal, I don't know what to do with it? Well, you know enough about real estate that you process it down every single option in your brain. And you're like, yep, we'll use this, we'll use this, we'll use this. You're like the general contractor that puts it all together. The general contractors don't swing the hammers. They don't pull the cabinets off. They don't get the splinters. They don't work hard, right? They have the vision. They put the thing together and they benefit from their knowledge and the relationships they have with their subcontractors. It's the same thing you're doing. You're playing the role of GC, general contractor, with these deals. You're bringing in all the pieces that are needed. And that's how you're able to make $3,500 an hour with your time. It's why you're able to make deals work that other people can't. It's why you're sitting in the captain's seat, because you learned. You paid the price. You didn't try to take the easy way out. You didn't try to get involved in real estate investing without ever feeling anxiety. I mean, you just did everything right, and now you're benefiting. And that's what I want everyone to hear, is that there is a, like, there's a summit to this mountain that we're all climbing. And when you get there and you're sitting in the captain's seat, it's pretty nice. Can you give us any examples, Paul, or any maybe advice for what you did to get here so that someone else taking that same journey can get there faster or better?
Well, it's back to that I lie every day. That's exactly. And I think that to myself, okay, today I need to learn something. How can I be a little bit better? And to be successful is a choice, not a destination. And I was like, I choose to be successful, but I have to transform into something else to become that. And that transformation is what makes it possible. And like you say, it takes 3 to 5 years. That does not happen overnight, but you got to put in the paces. Personally, I liked it. I like to learn. It's step number one, learn. So it's not that hard for me to then apply it, test it, and then share it. And I people come to me quite a bit asking for help, and I'm an open book, and I help however I can.
For the people who have read my article on how I bought and analyzed a deal in 5 minutes without ever seeing it, this was the guy that I was talking to, right? Like, I met Paul, I talked to Paul, I could immediately tell Paul knows what he's doing. Everyone that was there at the conference I met you at spoke very well about you. I did a little bit of research and I knew he's an honest guy. I feel safe with them, right? So I was fine buying a deal that you provided me the information on 5 minutes into hearing about it and putting it under contract, right? Now, there's still due diligence that goes involved. It's not like I just jumped off a cliff and said, well, I'll trust that this parachute Paul gave me is going to open, right? But there's no reason not to buy it. That's what I want people to understand. When you become that guy who everybody looks to, opportunities come up that aren't there for other people, you know, and like, you're doing everything right, Paul. And I love that. Brandon, you've been quiet for a while.
I have been a little quiet. No, you've been covering this. That's good. Tell me, Paul, one last question before we move on. I'm wondering, it took you 15 years to get into this game. You know, it took you 15 years of sitting on the sideline, right? Why does it take people so long? And what advice do you have to others who are listening to this going, you know what, I don't want to be sitting here 15 years from now thinking I still want to get into real estate. So what advice do you have for those people?
I had to find the pain. I kind of floundered for a while. I poured myself into work, and then you kind of come out of it and I realize, oh my gosh, I'm in what I call the real world matrix. I am exchanging my time for money. I'm jacked into the cubicle just like Neil was, and I'm there. And when you realize that and your eyes are opened and you finally take the right pill, you're like, and that's what I actually would harness that pain. Like, I will not accept this. This is, and once you got to find that pain, that deep seated emotional outcome or that deep seated emotional pain to drive you towards the summit, like you used a while ago, David, to actually get where you want to go. And until you find that for you, and that's not going to be the same for everybody. I mean, some people really like their jobs, but what happens when your dad has cancer and you can't go spend time with them because you have to spend time at work? That might change. And if you don't have the freedom to say, I have the income stream to walk away or go in sabbatical or demand, it's amazing when you have what is called screw you money and you have streams of income and you're not working for money anymore, then the power struggle, the power shift is entirely on your side of the ledger. And you can basically dictate to your employer or dictate to life what you're going to do. I want to control. And if you want control, if you need control and you realize you don't actually have it, you're not happy, that's what you need to find.
That's super, super insightful. Yeah. Like, again, like, you might not hate your job right now. You might have a great job, but like you said, like, what if all of a sudden something changes, a family member gets sick or you need more time off or you have another kid or whatever. Right. So by setting ourselves up now, knowing that the future is uncertain, let's give ourselves the best opportunity of having an amazing life for the next 80 years rather than living reactively to, crap, something bad happened. Now I better, I don't have any rentals. So yeah. You know, feel the pain point and also know that the future is going to be uncertain. Super, super good. So, all right. So we could probably talk for 100 hours here, but you know, we've been doing this for an hour. So I want to be respectful of your time today, Paul, as well. So let's shift gears here and head over to the world famous fire round.
Fire round.
It's time for the fire round.
All right, let's get to the fire round. These questions come direct out of the Bigger Pockets forums, which I know, Paul, you're active in. So you might have seen these before. If not, they're going to be fresh and new for you. Number one, overnight, the ceiling in the main floor bathroom of our fourplex collapsed due to a water leak. We tried to enter the unit above to shut the water off, and there's an angry pit bull inside. The lease says no pets. I can't get a hold of the tenant. Now what do I do? That's a really unique question. That's not that
That's
absurd.
A very specific problem. Yeah. Well, first off, you turn off the water. Yeah, that's number one. I the only tool that I ever carry around at all ever is a T-bar from Home Depot for $7. I cannot tell you how many people, including contractors, including plumbers, that don't have one.
Yep.
And my house is flooding. So next, they have a pit bull. Okay, call animal shelters. It's almost certainly not supposed to be there. It's not legal. They're gone. I have taken too much grief from tenants. If they break the leases, they don't do things and they're causing problems. I prefer to do things like cash for keys. And in this case, you'd probably file an insurance report and they'd have to move anyway. So the problem would probably solve itself. But I don't like to leave people in that are not cooperative and not following the rules.
There you go.
But I would do it with cash for keys. I would do it with cash for keys to begin with before eviction.
What's cash for keys, Paul?
Yeah.
Cash for keys is when you offer to a tenant to move. For if they won't move first off by themselves, because they're being uncooperative, you say, well, how about I give you $300 on Friday? And when your stuff's out and you have the keys, and I'll give you $300 and you move in the next place versus the potential $1,000 or more that it might cost to wherever you happen to live for an eviction.
There you go. There you go.
All right, Paul, next question. Right now, my wife and I are looking for a property to buy. A lot of the ones I'm seeing.
You didn't tell me, David? Come on. Okay.
But this is why Brandon's a podcast host, not a comedian. All right. A lot of the ones I'm seeing are already renovated and have tenants. Is it worth it to invest in one of those, or should I buy a nasty one and fix it?
And they're looking for an investment, I presume?
Yes.
Are they trying to a house hack or what?
They're looking for a property to buy. They're basically saying, should I buy a turnkey house that's in really good shape, or should I go for a fixer-upper?
But it would end up depending what they want. If they just want to live in themselves and they're not looking for an investment, just buy the most convenient one like a typical retail buyer would be. I assume since they're on the forums that they're looking for an investment. I always like to be able to buy equity and put sweat equity into it if you're doing a house hack, especially. If you have the potential to do house hacking and you're willing to do with the additional headache that it takes, how can you not do house hacking? It is probably the single greatest lever available to somebody trying to reach financial independence.
Yeah, totally agreed. Totally agreed. All right. Number three here. This is kind of a long question, but I think it's a really good one that a lot of people are struggling with. I'm actually going to summarize it because it's a really long question. But basically, this guy, before he got into financial freedom, real estate, this whole idea of early retirement, he was living like everybody else. And so he says when he was he bought a brand new 2013 Chrysler 300 because he thought he deserved it to have this amazing thing because he worked hard. But now he's got this massive car payment that's like more than a mortgage payment. And he still owes $15,000 left on it. So he's wondering, should I just sell the car? Maybe even though I can't sell it for the same amount, should I just pay it off as quick as possible? What's your advice to somebody like that who's stuck with that huge, massive payment?
If you can find a way to, have you ever heard of this, the car service that to where it's like Uber, but you can actually rent your car
Turo.
Out on the weekends?
Turo.
Find a way to make that. Yeah, Turo, that's it. I consider doing it, but I'm too lazy. If you are in a pinch, you have to make your whatever you have available to you, whether it be a house for house hacking or car for car hacking, make that thing useful. Start doing Uber. If it's a nice car, turn that asset or turn that liability into an asset, even if it doesn't actually break even. I assume he needs a car. So if he sells it, he's going to lose money. So why not think a little bit differently and try and figure out a way to make that make money?
I love it.
Go to a clown, you know, a store. There's no way that you're not going to find a way to make that make money if you want it to. It's just you don't have the desire to. You just want a way out. You made the mistake to get into it at that much. Find a way out. Think outside the box. There is no box. Figure out a way.
I like it. That's awesome.
Very good, Paul. All right. Last question. I read the book, Long Distance Real Estate Investing, which, side note, Paul actually helped edit.
cool thing. All right. I will be completing that. Yeah, Paul was the guy that so any spelling errors, we can blame Paul. And we'll be so I read the book and we'll be completing my first flip in 2 months. With the profits, I would want to reinvest in a rental in a more affordable market. And all my research has led me to the Midwest and to the Southeast. The research has included the buy to rent ratios on Zillow and has given me some cities to look into. What more would you do to determine which market you would want to focus on to build your core for?
I love that question. And it has almost nothing to do with the market itself. It's where you have connections. Invest where you know, or invest where you know people. Then figure out if it fits the numbers that you're working for. The numbers for an investment, for a rental investment, for cash flow are going to work. You can pick anywhere from Tulsa, Oklahoma, over to Savannah, Georgia, and up to Cleveland. And between that area someplace, there are a major metropolitan area, it cash flows somewhere, somehow. And they all have their pros and cons, and you can stack rank them. It doesn't matter. Find somewhere where you know a property manager, you know a good agent. That's where you start. Then you find the house.
I could not agree more. And that's pretty much exactly what I said in the book. So
nice.
Thank you for
affirming. Maybe I read it.
All right. Well, let's shift gears one last time and head over to the world famous.
Famous Four.
Now, these are the same four questions we ask every guest every week. But before I throw them at you, Paul, let's hear from Mindy on what is going on this week over on the Bigger Pockets Money podcast.
Thanks for asking, Brandon. This week on the Bigger Pockets Money podcast, we talked to Chris and Debbie Emick, a couple with two daughters who are working towards financial independence. A combination of local and long distance real estate investing, coupled with frugality and conscious spending, have them very close to financial freedom. All right, now it's time for the Famous Four.
All righty. So let's get to the Famous Four. Question number one. Paul, what is your favorite or current favorite real estate related book?
Okay, so I really liked the Building Wealth One House at a Time. It was written by a guy named John Chaub. I've actually been to his conferences, and that's where I learned how to do the door knock, and I actually have been to his house. Super nice guy. He's just a sage of real estate. And his principle is build wealth buying one house at a time. So if you're just getting started, that is just the greatest way to start. The numbers are nice and round, and they're always a little too convenient, but the concept is of how to approach it is perfect. If you want to learn how to actually run the numbers to figure out your NOI, whatnot, the ABCs of real estate is still the best one I found for an average mortal to actually understand. And it talks about apartments or multifamily, but actually it works the same principle. It works for single family. And I still use that today on my single family investments. Is I do the same numbers. And I use the same due diligence process that he uses for multifamily.
Well, you are anything but an average mortal. That's why I thought that was funny. You're a bit of a god among
no,
men.
No, gotcha.
All right. Tell me, what is your favorite business book?
Okay, so I like, if you're not really good at finances yet, I really like the Richest Man in Babylon, just to get your head on straight about finances. It's just super simple. It's a quick read. If you're for the take the next step, if you're talking about a business and how to make it perform better, whether it's real estate or not, The Pumpkin Plan by Mike Michalowicz or whatever his name is, Mike Michalowicz.
That was a good book.
It's a brilliant book. A lot of things with the one thing and the Pumpkin Plan are very similar, but the Pumpkin Plan kind of gives you specifics on how to do it with a business. And you want to basically, the summary is the niches are in the riches, and fire your worst clients, or in our case, tenants. And so the next book that I would recommend is by the same author, Mike Michalowicz, is The Profit First. And it is how to remove the psychology of bake balance budgeting that so many small business owners do. You look at that checking account and you think, oh, I have 10,000, 20,000, whatever's in there. I have a lot of money. And you make decisions based on your expenses, when in fact, you should have had in your books or however you run things that you should actually have 5,000 of that allocated for business or for taxes or for 5,000. And you always pay yourself first. So profit first. And it reduces that operating account that you're actually making buying decisions out of to a very small number that you make a rational. And the one I'm crazy about now is The Big Leap. Have you guys read The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks?
No.
No.
I think you guys should read it. You would love it. I know, Brandon, you're a big reader. It basically allows you to, teaches you how to break through the upper limit problem that he says so many of us have. When you gain success, we sabotage ourselves because we've kind of gone beyond our comfort level, and it triggers us to kind of sabotage ourselves. And our thermostat has gone too high and we were uncomfortable. And it walks you through how to kind of work your way around that and kind of find your zone of genius. And ironically, real estate is probably not my zone of genius.
What is your zone of genius?
My zone of genius is actually helping other people have mindset shifts on how to attack life and actually find their own personal zone of genius and empower them. So I never knew it, but actually David was saying, people trust me naturally. I don't try to do that. People trust me and I'm trustworthy. And so people open up to me about things that I didn't know. maybe I should be a therapist or some sort of a coach or something.
That's funny. Are you ever told that you look like a young Steve Jobs? Cause you look just like a young Steve Jobs. It's kind of weirding me out creepy. A little bit. Yeah, I'm going to find a picture and put it side by side with
Now I'm right.
Anyway, okay. Let's move on.
Mindy Jensen is always saying that Brandon looks like the lead singer of the Spin Doctors.
I don't even know what Spin Doctors is.
It was a band when we were like really little that probably either you or I was allowed to listen to.
We sing one of their sing one of their songs, David. What are their songs?
I don't know, and I wasn't allowed to listen to them. Paul, okay. You got anything?
I wouldn't be able to either. No.
Anyway. All right. Well, we want to know, does Brandon look more like the lead singer of the Spin Doctors or does Paul look more like a young Steve Jobs? Yeah. I don't think I look like anybody. I always get left out of these conversations. I'm an original.
Just ugly. All right.
Nobody famous is as ugly as me. All right, Paul, what are some of your hobbies?
So hobbies right now are, I've started podcasting. I'm trying to get better at public speaking. I find that something I'm going into more is like, I have these ideas and I want to be able to more effectively share those. And then I'm getting into fitness and diet, and I'm like going all like plant-based and everything, getting all granola.
Nice. Very, very.
I'm going to live to be 123. I'm going to make it to 2100.
You're going to make it to 2100. Brandon, he lives in Washington, and that's how everybody there is very granola. That's a very good way to put it.
Yeah, I would fit right in.
You would fit right in, especially with the beard. It's very worthy of the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, oh, the beard's in for sure.
All right, last question from me. What do you believe sets apart successful real estate investors from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
It's kind of restating what I said before, but it is absolutely finding that deep-seated inner fire on and. What's crazy is it doesn't have to be about real estate. Real estate is a vehicle, is a tool to get you where you want to go. And if you want to escape the rat race, if you're tired of being on the hamster wheel, and like the word I use, like you're in the real world matrix and you want, and you just see that realization and you want out. And that helped picture that. And actually, there's a formula that's called TEAR, TEAR, thoughts plus emotions plus actions equals results. And you have to have the thoughts in order to think about it, but the emotions are what's clear. And once you harness those emotions, your actions kind of come subsequently as a result, and then you get your results.
Fantastic.
Well, will real estate also get you out of the rate rats or just the rat race?
Yeah, the rate rats is what we called it, right? Coin that one? Trademark it.
You know, in a serious note, The Matrix is an incredibly good movie to watch if you're looking to change your life in any way. Whatever your struggle is that you're trying to get out of, I love, love, love that movie just for the mindset that it
comes. Yeah, the idea that you can shoot your way out of anything. It changes. Right.
Or you can just like learn just slipping your eyes.
Exactly. Isn't that the theme of The Matrix? Like you just shoot enough people and you can get out of anything.
Plug that thing into the back of your head and I know how to fly a helicopter. I mean, it's worked for me so far, so I can only support it.
Anyway, all right.
Hey, Paul, I so appreciate you sharing so much wisdom with us that you have and so many of these like really good concepts. I could probably talk to you all day long. And I hope everyone who listens to this goes back and listens again, because I guarantee that you will find more if you listen to this a second time. Tell me, for the people who want to learn more about you, where can they find out more about you?
Okay. Yeah. I'm on Bigger Pockets. I'm pretty active there. And I have a website that's called levelupmastermind.info. That's .info, not .com. And that will take you over to my website. And I am actually, will have a free offer to anybody who is on Bigger Pockets that's interested. If you're hitting that upper limit and you have a struggle on that page, there's a questionnaire, fill it out. I will answer you personally on what is the struggle that you have that is keeping you from branching out or taking yourself to the next level to level up your life. Send it in there and I will get out to you personally.
Awesome. All right. Good deal. Well, thank you, Paul. This was fun. I learned a ton of good ideas that I'd never even heard of. So I love that. I love learning new stuff. So thank you so much for sharing. And I'm sure we'll see you around the Bigger Pockets community.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, bro.
And that was our show with Paul Thompson. Fantastic. I loved all the actionable stuff that was in that episode. Like, I love just hearing, you know, how he's getting deals and how that system works with the virtual assistants and the phone calls and all that. I think, yeah, I'm totally inspired.
Yeah, that three-letter option of intent system that he's put together, cool. That alone is worth its weight in gold. I'm going to start doing that immediately.
Yeah, very, very cool. So yeah, if you guys, if you find your mind wandering during that show or anything like that, which would be tough because he was so good at like giving good raw information, but if go back and listen to it again, like grab a notebook, listen on your drive home from work or whatever, and apply those things to your life. Don't just listen and go, oh, that was cool, but figure out what are you going to apply today in your life that he talked about today? What one thing can you do today, like right now in your business? And if you don't know what that is, go listen again and you'll find lots of gold. So very cool. Very cool. Nice pick there, David Green, on, you know, choosing Paul for the show.
I am happy to contribute. The more listeners that we have subscribing, the better guests that we can get on here, the more value we can bring, and the more money we can make everyone. So you better get some bigger pockets.
There you go. So if you are interested in becoming a guest on the Bigger Pockets podcast, we do have a system, a process in place for dealing with that. Lots of people want to come on the show and we would love to have you. If you are awesome, have done at least, we like to say at least a dozen or 10 deals you've put together and you have a great personality, go to biggerpockets.com/guest, G-U-E-S-T. And that kind of starts the process. We can't guarantee anything. We get lots and lots of submissions, but we want to hear from you. And I'll give you a hint. If you want to increase your chance of getting on the show, submit a video with your application. There's a spot you can link to a video. Just record something on your phone. It shows our producer kind of a little bit who you are. So with that, we got to get out of here. David Green, you want to add anything or take us out?
This is David Green for Brandon Rate Rass Turner signing off.
I knew you were going to do that.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, F-O-U-R, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.